Welcome to Create Your Bliss with Mika Annan. Today I'm so excited we get to talk with Alexia Neonakis, who is an amazing Vedic astrologer and does wonderful travel Vedic predictions as well as a number of other things. She works with your body in very many ways, healing and cleansing. She does readings. So Alexia Neonakis is a graduate of NYU, New York University, and she studied at the Ayurvedic Institute in New Mexico with Dr. Vasant Ladd, Dr. Claudia Welsh, and Chitra Gyaki, among others. She is an NAMA certified Ayurvedic practitioner, and she'll tell us what that is, and a certified yoga instructor with a special focus on Ayurvedic yoga. Her true love in the Vedic science is for Jyotish, the science of light, which she merges with Ayurveda and yoga in her personalized Vedic astrology readings. Alexia has been analyzing Vedic charts professionally since 2006. She's been drawing up charts for everyone she knows since she was about 13. She formally studied Jyotish with Rani Gail Dreyer, Chandra Jade Shankar, and was a devoted student of the beloved late astrologer Bethleya. Alexia's heart-centered Vedic astrology readings are meant to enlighten and empower and always offer clarity and focus on the path ahead. Finding positivity in life's exciting and sometimes challenging moments is the hallmark of a reading, as is a renewed sense of trust and faith in oneself. While her focus is on Jyotish, she also uses her additional tools of Ayurveda, yoga, and nutritional cleansing to support her clients when they are appropriate and need to be used. So, Lexi, as we all call you, all of your devoted clients here, and I can vouch that the positivity and openness of her readings is quite amazing.
Thank you.
So, what exactly are all these things that maybe people don't know about, Ayurveda, Jyotish, the science of light?
They're all sister sciences in the Vedic system. So Ayurveda is the study of life, and it's used for the body. And Jyotish, the science of light, Vedic astrology, is used for the mind. And then yoga, which means to unify or to yoke, is for spirituality, actually. Really to prepare for meditation. And so those three, when you use those in conjunction, they really help you to get to a deeper place of personal understanding and, you know, hopefully some sort of connection with a higher, whatever it is, higher self, higher being, just to have a deeper understanding of what we as are meant to do as individuals here on this plane.
And kind of our place in the universe, is that
yes.
Kind of a sense of how
Yes.
How we flow. So how did you find this?
So I found a book when I was about 12 or 13 that was, it was totally tattered. There was no cover. It was completely the masking tape on the binding. That was, you know, corners were missing. And I remember finding it and being like, what is this? This is amazing. And I opened it up and it was all numbers. And I was like, whoa, what is this? And it was an ephemeris, essentially, which is the degrees of the planets, where the degrees of the planets are each day. And then it also had the astrological meanings of what the sun in a certain sign and the moon in a certain sign, what it meant. And so I pretty much devoured that book every day and started to look up everybody I knew and started mapping out their charts, learned how to do that from the book, and that was really all I did then. From then on, it's really all I've been doing now for almost 30 years is mapping out people's charts in there. You know, it's like it's a picture of the sky, your personal roadmap of the moment you were born, when you entered in, what the stars, you know, where things were aligned for you, what your karma is entering into this space. And so, you know, I mean, if I were to go back a little bit further, I remember specifically being in the third grade and learning about the lineup of the planets and how the planets were in the sky. And remember, I remembered wanting to actually understand and remember the order of the planets and learn more about the constellations and such. And I remember wanting to find out if my sign, I'm a Cancer, in both Western and Vedic, I remember wanting to find out if my sign was compatible with some friends' signs and this and that. So it was something where even back when I was 8 years old, I wanted to know more about it in terms of interpersonal relationships. So when I got to be 13, you know, and I discovered this book then, it just opened up my whole world. And that, and like I said, it's really all I did ever since I found that book. And then, you know, really just started mapping out charts for everybody I knew. It's almost like I have a photographic memory for birthdays and charts. Oh, I mean, wow. I have friends who are like, wait, what time was my son born? And I'll just rattle it off. It's kind of imprinted on my brain like that. So it's to me, it's my purpose. It's my dharma. It's what I'm meant to do. And it's also my way of sort of channeling the information for people to help and heal.
Because it's very nice to have a structured system to do that with.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. The thing with, for me, is that when I look at the chart, you know, it does have that structure. It has the houses, it has the planets, it has the signs. And in Vedic astrology, we have the 12 zodiac signs, but we also have an additional 27 signs called nakshatras. And those nakshatras, which is roughly translated as lunar mansions, based on the moon's movement each day, basically, they're not just connected to the moon, they're connected to all the planets. But these nakshatras are really the heart and soul of Vedic astrology specifically. But having these different levels of structure and then taking each, when I taught my classes on it, I sort of associate it more with like a tapestry, and you're taking each thread, each strand, each thing, and you're starting to weave and weave and weave each, you know, and the picture starts to emerge more and more. And as you pick up your one strand, okay, this house is prominent. This, then you take up the next strand, this planet is prominent, or this is the planet we're looking at, this is the sign we're looking at. And you start to think of those together and merge them together, and you start to get a picture slowly, slowly. And the deeper you go into it, obviously the more complicated things get, but the more information, of course, comes out, and the more exciting it gets. And the more you sit with this every day and practice this, you know, like healing art, your intuition opens up tremendously too, because it is a light science. It's a science of light. It's all about shining the light on the chart, allowing the lights within the chart to shine.
And then you articulate it and reflect it back to people in a language that makes sense to them, that, you know, having experienced it as a client, that you really clarify. It's very beautiful experience to have you talk about the interaction of us and all those elements in our world.
Yes. And it's, you know, it's exciting as a practitioner to discover those things with my clients, and to see how they are playing out and how each planet really does play out and what each person is tuning into, and what things might need more support at certain times. Because that's the bottom line, is to me, this is our roadmap. This is our individual roadmap for our lives. I don't think we'd be put here without some sort of guidance. And sometimes we need to reach out to other practitioners to help us understand what our purpose is, or what all the different things that we need support with. What's going on right now? Why so much confusion? Why so much, you know, sadness? Or why, you know, when's the opportunity coming? Or how do I manage this situation in life? And it gives a lot of support, and a lot of, like you said before, the structure is there, and it really helps people to walk away with a deeper understanding of what's happening now. But also, people walk away with tools, and so it's very practical. You know, yes. It's a very practical thing. You walk away with actual dates. You walk away with actual tools and remedies, we call them, and things that you can do, and you know, ways to align yourself, and actions to take or maybe not to take at certain times. So it really is very helpful in really just using your energy more effectively at certain times in life. And that's, it's to me, that's a great gift to have that deeper sort of understanding and awareness of, okay, this is a time to hop on this train that's running by me now, or this time maybe I'll tune into a different area.
So it's a lot about how you participate in the world and to be more conscious about it.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the empowerment side of it. the enlightenment side and the empowerment side. Because you really, I find that people walk away from a reading feeling more connected to themselves and feeling more empowered with what's going on in their lives and what actions they need to take. You know, if I always make sure that people know what they're doing, you know, it's like, okay, what are we doing? What do you have going forward? Let's make sure that we've got this figured out. You know, I never want someone to leave a reading saying, I don't know what just happened. You know, like that never happens right. Because they might be like, wow, that was a lot of information, but they get a recording and, you know, I'm always here to check in with people, but I always want to make sure that everyone's like, okay, you got it? You sure? You get it? What's going on? Like, let's make sure that this is really super clear, because clarity is the whole point. As well as, you know, being trusting yourself, knowing that you got this, that this is trusting your intuition for yourself in the direction that inkling, that feeling that people have. You know, we always know what's right for ourselves. Sometimes we just need someone else to help us be more certain about that. And that's what I think doing these readings actually can do. It can really make a person feel more, just more stable in themselves.
And some information that supports an intuitive hit or a need for change or a need for stabilization or one of those things. So how did you end up doing Vedic charts? Because it's different than a lot of standard Western astrology.
It's different. There are definitely overlapping connections for sure. And both systems are completely valid and have their, you know, strengths. And to me, it's about the karma of the person with the system. And I was really always drawn more to the Eastern countries anyway. Since I was really little, I always wanted to go to India. I just had that karma with the country. I've always preferred like textiles that were, you know, a little more Eastern in flavor. And so I think I definitely have, you know, probably had a couple of lives there. But for me, I got to a point in my early to mid 20s where I realized I wasn't pulling up charts as much as I was in the past. And I was like, hold on, what's happening here? And I realized that the Western chart for me was not offering I wasn't able to access the deeper questions that I had around, you know, why this karma, why these placements, why this chart. And I felt like there was just more information that I really was looking for. And so I was out to dinner with some friends in New York City, and this one guy had to leave dinner early because he had to go get a reading with his Vedic astrologer. And my ears perked up. I was like, whoa, 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 what? and he was like, oh my gosh, this guy is psychic. I know he is. And I was like, hold on a second. Give me his information. Like, I got to know more. And I instantly called him. This is Jade. And I instantly called him. And without my even saying anything to him about my interest in astrology, my love of it, my years of studying it, he right away said to me, I will teach you. And honestly, I didn't even hear it. I wasn't even aware of what he was saying, because I don't think I was ready at that moment. But when I got my tape and listened, I was like, whoa, he just offered to teach me. This is huge. So it was, you know, it was a pretty incredible moment for me. So when I had my reading with him, it just blew my socks off. You know, I was very much impressed and just amazed at the depth of information and the nuances and the, like, all of it that came through. It was just so much more specific and personal, and the timing was accurate and important. And I knew right then, I was like, I have to study this. This is it. This is what I need to do. And so I did. I started studying with him, and then I started studying with Ronnie in New York. I was doing that since about 1999, just studying it more in depth, and then getting a computer program and pulling up charts again and starting to do charts for everybody I knew on the side for free. And, you know, so when I in 2005, in February of 2005, I went to India. I had, you know, like I said before, I've had a really strong draw to India my whole life. And so February 2005, I went. I just knew it was the moment I had to go. And a good friend of mine was in India at that moment studying in Mysore at the yoga studio there, the Ashtanga studio. And so I met her and I went by myself and I met up with her for about a day or two. And then I just took off and went around by myself. And I just had this feeling that I was going to be like held in the palm of India's hand. I just knew that I'd be okay. Mm-hmm. And so I had some really, really wild experiences there, of course, as somebody who's on sort of a path and a seeker and a mission do when they go to India, because India isn't necessarily a place you go for like a vacation. Like, I don't know. And people say that, I'm like, yeah, no, why don't you go to like Aruba? But so India is definitely more, you go there for some sort of experience and something to be revealed. And one of the things that happened, I received darshan from a Hindu priest. And it was, darshan is like a viewing or a, you know, an experience where you go and they say that a certain goddess was sort of, he was embodying a goddess. And these are things that were all semi-new to me. And I've had a lot of interesting sort of experiences in my life where I don't really doubt anything anymore. I'm not going to say yes or no to anything because I know that I've had some wild experiences and I know people who have had too. So there's no judgment or questioning any of it right anymore for me. But when I walked into the room to receive this sort of viewing with this Hindu priest, he instantly saw me and goes, "Oh, Jyotisha, Ayurveda, Jyotisha, Ayurveda." And I was like, "Whoa." And I started crying. And my husband's the one who will like grab the tissues at a Hallmark commercial. And so I'm not that one, you know, I'm sensitive, but it just hit me so deep. And I was like, yes, that is me. That is what I'm meant to be doing. And so it was really a turning point. The rest of my trip, I spent 3 weeks traveling around India and getting Ayurvedic treatments and really visiting Ayurvedic gardens where everything was plants that were planted in accordance with the planets. I mean, trees that were for the nodes of the moon and planets, flowers that were based on Venus and Mercury. And it just overwhelmed me. And I was like, this is it. This is my calling and my direction. And so when I got back to New York City, after my trip ended, even though I tried to extend my trip about 10 different ways and it wasn't working. So I was like, okay, got it. I got to go back home. So I went back to New York and I was working at a nonprofit organization at that time. And we were, the day I got back, I was at the UN working for, you know, it was a women's rights organization. And we were involved in some work that was going on at the UN that week. And I just kept thinking, I've got somebody else's job. I've got the most incredible opportunity here. And it's not for me, it's for somebody else. And I need to make that right. And so, you know, everybody I worked with was incredibly supportive of it. And that week, when I was back, I found out that the Ayurvedic Institute in New Mexico was opening for, you know, they were accepting applications for their fall program. And so I applied and I got in. And later that week, I actually met my husband, told him I was moving out to the desert. And he came with me a few months later and I went to study Ayurveda. And the school had everything that all of these wacky, weird things that I had been into. You know, even in my 20s, I wanted to study Sanskrit. And it's like, who studies Sanskrit, you know? Right. So this was, you know, I found my Vedic home in the Ayurvedic Institute in Albuquerque. So I left my fabulous New York City life and moved to New Mexico with my then boyfriend of a few months, you know, and ended up marrying him there in the foothills. But had, you know, I was overwhelmed and excited that I could then speak my language, you know, this Vedic language that I had been really studying and learning my whole life on my own. And people would understand me and wouldn't think I was, you know, all the things I've been called in my life with, you know, kindness, because I've just been different in terms of that for my whole life. And I think it's been, for people, it's interesting and it's funky, but I found a whole group of people who were completely in alignment with that for me. And so that was really exciting. It was like finding my tribe.
And a home. That's beautiful. You know, yeah. A spiritual home. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, that early 2005 was really my turning point in terms of saying, okay, I'm leaving the nonprofit world that I'd been in for so long in New York City and doing really exciting, wonderful work, and going into the healing arts, the Vedic healing arts, and getting my degree in Ayurveda and my yoga certification, and studying with Bethela, my teacher, who, you know, she was my Jyotish guru. She's the one who really, it just made it hit home in a way that I just, I have such a connection with her. It was wonderful to find my teachers and my, you know, like I said, the people that I really, had wanted to be around and study with.
So it sounds like this was really a karma or a soul's journey for you, that, mm-hmm. that you had an intuition all along that there was mm-hmm. something calling you, or you knew you had a calling, and that then you followed it and watched it evolve.
Yes, absolutely. I knew when I was 16 that I wanted to do this. But I remember thinking, well, who does that? Like, who makes a living doing that? Because in like 1987, you know, like, I didn't really know many astrologers. So I've known my whole life that this was what I was meant to do, but it was always like, well, you can't really, can you? So then I went to study, you know, at NYU. I started off as a psychology major and realized quickly that that was too constrictive for me. Yeah. And so I branched into a bigger box of philosophy with a psychology minor still. And that was more exciting. And but the whole time I was just trying to find, you know, with the chart, it's the person's individual psychology, the individual's philosophy, all of it is right there. And it's, everybody interacts differently with their planets and their placements. Even I have a couple of clients who are twins and triplets, and doing their charts, you get different information.
That's wild.
It is wild, especially when they're born like a minute or two apart. See, the beauty of Vedic astrology is we have a lot of divisional charts that are all based on the birth chart. And so we can look into these divisional charts, and that's where the subtle changes happen. Mm-hmm. As well, like I said before, the more and more you sit with these light beings, you know, the planets essentially, you get, your intuition grows. So you'll pick up on that person's energy, and there, all sorts of information will come through for me personally. Like, I'll see things visually, I'll hear things, I'll feel things in my body. And I'm very clear now that that's not me. Because it happens, it will shift. For instance, yesterday I was doing charts for some kids, an 8-year-old and a 16-year-old, a brother and sister. The 16-year-old is actually a triplet. And I had done her brother's chart a few weeks ago. But when I was doing the 8-year-old's chart, I was getting these feelings in my stomach and things. And I was like, he's got some GI tract issues. What's going on? And so when I sat down with the mother who came in for the reading, she instantly asked me about his health and GI tract stuff. And I was like, well, that was very clear coming through. And I was clear that it was him and not me, just because I trust it now more. But also because when I shifted gears and went into his sister's chart, it all went away. All of the physical Wow. sensations I was experiencing instantly shifted. And I was like, okay, there you go. I'm very, very clear about it. And the fact that she asked it instantly was confirmation that yes, you know, these things happen. It's subtle stuff, and you have to trust it. I mean, to me, it's like the universe will whisper stuff to us, and we just need to perk up and listen and trust.
And be willing to pay attention to honor it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And refine it. Because I think one of the things that happens in the culture that you and I grew up in is that we're taught to edit out all that information.
Yeah, yeah.
And dismiss it, as opposed to understanding that it's really information.
Yeah.
And the difference between doing philosophy and something like this astrology is that it's very practical. You have to have a whole theory of how the world works, but you also have to incorporate it into the actual working of the world.
Yes.
So it's not just an abstraction that you can then, you know, theorize about infinitely. It's like, no, and then how does this...
Right. How do you implement it?
And it's And it's a system that works with the individual within the context, which I think is fascinating.
Yes. Yeah. That's where, you know, this is where it's a healing art. This is where it's a healing thing, you know, where people do feel like they have the more clarity, of course, right? And healed around certain things. Sometimes people will ask, you know, they're ask about things that were really traumatizing in their past or really upsetting, or why didn't this happen, or why did this happen, or, and I can look into the chart and I can look at those dates, I can look at the experiences, and I can have more information around why. And, you know, we're all human, we all have emotions and these experiences that we're going through on this plane. And sometimes it's, you know, it's just helpful to have a little more, it's just comforting to know that, okay, so there is a bigger reason, or there's a bigger purpose, or maybe it was just my karma, you know, however much we want to accept that or not, or kick against it. So, you know, it's, I think it offers comfort for people too, to know, okay, I can get some, it's like therapy, you know, a lot of times, right. That's where, you know, starting off with a psychology degree, it was like, okay, well, I can't be an astrologer when I was 17 and 18, but I can be a therapist, you know, and to me, this is what I'm doing. It's therapy.
And so define that. By therapy, you mean helping people understand themselves?
Yes. Yeah, helping people to understand themselves, helping people to just be healed in ways that are the deep, some deep wounds that come up for people and some deep questions that come up for people. Mm-hmm. In readings are, you know, it's also, I think the fact that it's, this is your chart. This is only for you. You know, this is something that your experiences are going to be coming, springing forth from this and your interactions. And so it gives us a rooting. Mm-hmm. That I think is really powerful, because it's not just, well, this theory says this, or this, you know, this system, not that those don't work, because they do and people have tremendous results. This to me is an additional healing modality for people, because it helps you to get more individualized.
And it seems like there's layers of that, because everybody then has their own reaction to the patterns and the beings of light, the light beings, the planets, mm-hmm. the stars, oh. the moon, different phases of the moon. So it's all
and Saturn.
And Saturn, which I love.
Right. Yeah, right. You're good with Saturn. And Mercury retrograde that we're in right now.
Which I also love. It's like all this detail. I mean, I find Saturn the great manifester. You know, you take all the potential. And I guess because I can get so distracted by all the potential, I love having, oh, let's make something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I always like to describe it as that, the great manifester, but also the, you know, in the dasha sequence, the planetary lineup that we live our lives through, Saturn always follows Jupiter. So Jupiter's all about faith and opportunities, and take this bundle of seeds and throw it out to the horizon and see how many you can throw and see how far you can go. And then Saturn comes along and goes, great, thanks a lot, Jupiter. So we got 1,000 seeds out there, but I can only take care of 3. So I'm just going to focus on these 3 right here, because these have got the most potential.
Right.
You know,
and so like,
the rest are gone. And that's the way it works. It's like, you know, Jupiter is all about, like, where's the opportunity? Where's the phase? Where's the excitement and the abundance and the, wow, let's go get it. And then Saturn comes in and goes, okay, guys, let's rein it in. What's the plan? What's the, you know, what's the deal? Who's doing what? Let's go at it. And, you know, they say Saturn is the stone that grinds the wheat, and we are the wheat. So some people are like, oh, great, I'm being pulverized. And then other people are like, yay, I'm being refined. So it's just, perspective is everything. I mean, to me, it's your perspective. You can, you know, you can read, you can do a reading, and I have people say to me all the time, well, is anything bad showing up? And then I'll go back and I'll say, hey, guess what? Remember when I said that this K2 time is really confusing and really foggy, and this time that you're going to be in for these many months might not be the easiest, but da-da-da-da, you know, and it's like you, the information is there. It's a matter of how you align with it and how you view the world and how you can rise up to a place of positivity and optimism, because honestly, that I think that makes all the difference in life. You know, you can go through life grumpy and complaining, and that won't get you anywhere. You know, or you can be like, great, I'm a victim of my planets. Well, we're all kind of in the same boat there, so might as well make the best of it.
Yeah, and I really appreciate your awareness of the positivity, but also the points of action and the points of choice. And it's really so much about personal responsibility and how do you want to respond. We can't necessarily control what the world does to us, but we do control how we respond.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You can either react and kick against it, or you can respond and try to integrate it and then grow from it. You know, I always think of the planets are, especially planets like Mars and the nodes of the moon, which are, you know, considered to be kind of rough, and the sun and Saturn, they're more malefic planets than benefic, technically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the cards are stacked against us to a degree. But the idea here is they're causing friction, and you can't grow without friction. So it's, you have to be okay in times of change and unrest and unsettling energies, but also have the awareness that, aha, there is something happening here. You know, that something is changing and something is growing. And so when you align yourself in that way, that's when the magic happens in life. Yes. That's when people, yeah, I mean, that's what makes all the difference. And that's not to discount people's hardships and the tragedies people, you know, because we are all emotional beings here. We all are having this experience together. But it really is like, okay, well, let me get this into perspective a little bit and see where I can find strength within myself to come to a place of, you know, deeper understanding and deeper personal growth.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about. You know, however we do that, that's what it's all about. And that's where the planets and their remedies connected with certain planets, certain houses, certain times of life, certain transits that are going to be more supportive than other times.
Yeah, I find it a very useful way of supporting yourself or being on your own side.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Thank you, you put it that way.
To have information, and then you're a little more prepared and you can deal with it. You know, if there's going to be a snowstorm, put on your winter clothes.
Right, exactly.
You're not at the beach. Let's not pretend.
<you know? laughs> Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah.
And I happen to love winter snowstorms. But we've talked a little bit about Mercury retrograde, so let's backtrack just a minute and talk about that, because I know for some people it's really horrifying. And I actually find it a useful time to sort of still all the energy. And mm-hmm. So talk about that first.
So Mercury retrograde happens about 4 times a year, so there's kind of no avoiding it. And so a lot of people will want to not sign anything, not do anything. I can't do this because it's Mercury retrograde. Well, we have to continue with our lives, first of all. But it's helpful to know there are certain days, the 5 days before a planet stations retrograde, before Mercury goes retrograde, and the 5 days after it goes retrograde are really the most intense. And so you'll find people, one of my friends even posted the other day when I wrote out, you know, Mercury's about to go retrograde, like, everybody, here's the information you need. And one of my friends was like, you sure it didn't happen last week? And I was like, well, actually, the 5 days before are the trickiest. So you're totally in tune with it. Yes. Essentially, yes. So the idea with Mercury retrograde, Mercury is about communication. It's about connections. It's about contracts and cars and computers and all of our ways of getting from one place to another, whether it's in the, you know, etheric realm with cyberspace, whether it's in the physical realm with getting to our car and going to wherever we need to go, and or whether it's we're talking to somebody and oops, someone just said something they didn't mean to say, or it's been misconstrued. So this is all the communication aspects and the connecting aspects come up whenever we work with Mercury in general. When Mercury is retrograde like it is right now, the planet appears to be rolling backwards in the sky. And so the idea is that it's almost like we're rolling backwards in terms of all of Mercury's indications, the communication aspect especially. And so what happens many times is there are misunderstandings, there's miscommunication, there's mistravel, there's all sorts of mishaps in the communication realm that really get people flustered and sort of thrown off their center. And the thing that I always say is, yes, these things are definitely possible. And just make sure, depending on what is going on in your life at the moment, that you're prepared properly. If you can sign contracts and send out important communication beforehand, great, go for it. If you can't, read it 1, 2, 3 times, have 2, 3 people read it for you. Make sure you've gotten everything in there that you need to have so that it's not misunderstood or that something important isn't missed. It's also, though, a really excellent time to go back, and we'll find what happens with Mercury retrograde specifically is people from our past will pop up. Teachers, right? Mercury is connected also to teachers. Teachers from our past will pop up. That happened to me just the other day. I ran into my high school photography teacher. I mean, I was a photo minor in college. Like, this was a big, important person for me. You know? I ran into him at IKEA buying photo frames. I was like, of course you're doing that. So this is Mercury retrograde in a very beautiful expression. And so the idea is it's a good time, you know, when these things from the past come up, whether it's just to say, hey, how are you? It's good to reconnect and to remember that part of yourself and to remember that connection. That's one aspect of it. That's just a beautiful sort of thing. But it also brings up experiences and maybe past projects that need resolving, past events in life that need to be sort of looked at again and gone over and completed. So it's really a time where you kind of clean out your closet, whether you're doing it physically or metaphysically. You know, it's a time to really go into your stuff emotionally, clear out the clutter. And it's a good time to take that sort of step back as Mercury is rolling backwards, right? You take that step back and say, okay, I've got some different perspective on it. And now I can see maybe what I wasn't able to see before when I started this event, this project, whatever it is, undertaking. Now I can go in, I can complete it, and I can feel good about it and wrap that up. And so that is many times, I've been seeing it happen all week with people I know and myself as well. Everybody seems to be sort of tying up loose ends. And that's one thing that's a really great great expression for Mercury retrograde. On the other hand, this particular Mercury retrograde, it's been connected with Mars. The day that it went retrograde, it was a new moon, and the moon energy was sitting with Mercury and Mars. And so that really fueled it for being highly emotional and potentially, disagreements and arguments and challenges, emotional challenges and challenging emotional communication. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be going around too. I've, you know, just friends and people on Facebook are writing, I don't know about you, but yesterday was an incredibly emotional day. I had a breakdown. I mean, I've heard that, you know, this week I've heard that from like 4 or 5 different people. So it's whatever planets it's traveling with, whatever sign it's in, it's going to get the coloring of those energies. And it, you know, Mercury is like a chameleon. It likes to sort of, it's totally unbiased. It's going to jump on board whoever it's with. So it's just going to sort of morph into the Mars energy and the Moon energy and make us go into those potentially challenging emotional spaces. Again, it's friction, right? Let's work these bugs out. Let's make sure that we say everything we need to say and make sure that everything is expressed so that there's not stuff, you know, underneath the surface. But the challenge of Mercury retrograde is sometimes people just blurt things out. So that's where it's good to know that it's Mercury retrograde so we can take a deep breath because Mercury is connected to the lungs. Just take a deep breath, get grounded, and then come from that place of deeper internal grounding so you can actually have productive, you know, communications rather than cantankerous ones.
That's really interesting because what I've been having this week are very profound conversations in a delightful way, but it's somehow been very easy to go very deeply with people sort of in the middle of a casual conversation and you get,
yeah,
like it's easy to say those really profound deep things that you might not always share. I mean, I was sharing with somebody at work who was talking about his intuitive reactions, and he always knows when there's something up with his children. This guy's an IT technician, you know, not our usual daily conversation.
Nice.
But it fit. It's been very interesting. And one of my brothers has been ill, and so to really be able to reach out and connect, it was interesting to listen to you about that emotional depth, because I also find, Lexi, that we can use the planetary energy to, if we want to go really deep, and if we can be really pure in our intention, it will really carry us to the core.
I mean, there it's light. It's all about the light. The science of light. And so it, And so for some, it's going to, the light's going to want to shed the, you know, it's going to be want to be sh the light's going to shed on some darker spots, and that's where people might have issue with that, because we have to look at our own challenging spots and have some real honesty about that.
Yes. Yeah, and to own it and not hide from it, but also to, you know, when those wounded places come up, say, wow, universe, here's this place needs some light, need a little healing, a little divine compassion here, because
Yeah,
it's
totally, totally.
hurting.
And what's funny just about this particular Mercury retrograde, it's the moon and Mercury together is when it sort of began. And so that is a, you know, a very heart mind sort of thing that's going on. And you know, in Ayurveda they say the seat of the mind is in the heart. So it's all about reconnecting that. It's all about tuning into the heart space. That's where it's all stemming from.
Beautiful.
And being able to actually trust that space, like your IT friend, who's, you know, he's got the mind stuff really figured out. And he's also really in tune with the heart stuff, where he knows when something is up, and he trusts it instead of trying to quantify it, you know.
That's very interesting. So, I know in the beginning you talked a little bit about karma, and I'm wondering what your, I don't know, because I don't want to trap you into anything like into a philosophy, but your underlying intuitive sense of the universe is, or what you trust in your daily life. How do you see us in the world? How do you see the world in us? How do you. How does, I don't know if that's a very clear question, but.
Well, I know, you know, I remember when I was at school with Dr. Ladd, and he would talk about, you know, and every people know all of these, we are all one. And I, you know, and you think on a level, yeah, that makes sense. And then when you experience that in meditation, like you actually see that, which I've had that experience of seeing almost like a matrix kind of plane, where everything was interconnected. And it really, it to me, that's incredibly, that's like a moment of time that's like, okay, that's incredibly profound, and that is what's going on. And so we're all just here working together, and trying to remember that we're working together, I think, is the hardest part of being embodied. You know, it's when you, if you look at things from the planetary perspective, which we're embodying those planets acting out in the world, it's they're not all going to be friendly with each other, and they're not all going to support one another. You know, it's they've got their own agendas, and so the way they act out in our lives is it's the way we are. It's the way we're living, and so I, yeah, I'm not. I mean, it's a big question, but it's I think it's a challenge though too, even when you have those experiences and have that overwhelming feeling of love, that you know is the core of the universe. And again, that was what I experienced in India. I had really, really profound moments of feeling that, where I was blown away and just couldn't believe. I was so grateful and so excited that it was I was experiencing these things, because it was something I'd always really yearned for and wanted, you know. So even when you have that, it's still still not easy being a human being. We still are, you know, we still have our fights and we still have our like, you know, it's, I think even when you're, you know, I know a lot of people that I'm friends with and who are on spiritual paths, so to speak, or whatever you want to call it. It almost makes things harder sometimes when you have that, because it's like, no, I know these things. I've experienced them and I know them from the deeper places in myself and the higher places in myself. I know these things to be true. And even in those, you know, so reaching to those places when you're having a challenging human moment, mm-hmm. I think that's it. I mean, to me, that's kind of what's happening here is we have to try to be working with each other in those ways. I mean, it's funny because I say that and I think, well, you know, some of the nakshatras, some of the Vedic signs are considered to be Devic in nature. So more of the, you know, godly kind of kind and gentle, like angelic energy. And some of them are Minutia, which is more earthly in nature. And some of them are Rajasic, which likes to dig in the dirt. I mean, they say it's, you know, really like the kind that like rips things up, rip up the floorboard, rip up the dirt, get in there and really dig, dig, dig. So there's like these three levels of energies that even express in the nakshatras and the Vedic signs and the particular degrees connected with each sign. And so some of us have more Devic, some of us have more Minutia, some of us have more Rajasic. So there are people who are more aligned with those different levels. It's not like we're all here to be peaceful, you know, Om Shanti kind of people. There are people out there who need, you know, we need the people who are digging in the dirt and tearing things up and, mm-hmm. you know, getting to the root of it to expose the darkness to light. So I don't know. I mean,
and I think that brings up something very important, because I think we all have a role and that we come in with some idea of what we're doing here. And my experience of working with you, Lexi, is it really helps me clarify and articulate that.
Mm. Good, yeah.
And it's a way of figuring out what resources we can use to make that happen.
Yes.
And it's because you can dig in the dirt to destroy or to create, and sometimes we need to destroy in order to do that, but to do it with, I don't know, consciousness and intention, whatever we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to...
Well, and yeah, consciousness and intention, I think that's perfect. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Because the thing, there's a word in Sanskrit that is, I think, probably one of my top favorite words. It's prajnaparad. Mm-hmm. And prajnaparad means crimes against wisdom.
Mm.
And that's, they say that's really the root of all imbalance. It's crimes against wisdom. It's like we all know, if we take a minute, or if we practice awareness and mindfulness, we all know what's best for us. We all have that quote-unquote intuition or that deeper knowing and understanding what's good for us from a physical, like food perspective to, exercise and spiritual practices and places to live and people to align with. And we all know what's good for us and what's not so good for us. And so when we are tuning into that place with the consciousness and the integrity and that mindfulness, that's where we are, you know, that's when we're most in the best health. You know, that's mm-hmm. when we are shining brightly and people are like, wow, this person really, really is in tune, you know. And it's true. It's like, well, they're following their deeper knowing and they're taking the time, whether it's through meditation, whether it's through yoga, whether it's through whatever it is, hiking in the woods, like whatever it is that is their version of connecting to themselves and to a deeper, higher place, you gain from that. You only gain the light. You only gain that deeper connecting and understanding in yourself. And then you can live your life just in a much happier space.
Yes. And I think that spiritual work, my understanding and watching people I knew and trying to do it myself, but watching people I knew who are very spiritual,
mm-hmm.
is that unlike, you know, if you're spiritual, nothing bad will happen. Well, life is life and things happen.
Right.
But if you're spiritual, it's how do you respond
Right,
when
right.
those things happen, and what part of you do you use to respond and interact and move forward in those times of struggle and difficulty and grief? I think that's when our spirituality really is a resource.
Absolutely, yeah. And just allowing ourselves the time, which is so challenging these days for people, to find the time for themselves, to honor themselves and have that space, allotted for their own. Yeah, that seems to be, I think, one of the greater challenges of this time.
I think so. And one of the things that is then how do you share that with your children? In this culture, and I think their experience is going to be very different than ours growing up, and it's so much information and so much stimulation. And what tools and what can they, how can we help them? What can we share, and what skills do they need to survive?
Well, I know that seems every kid I've ever met loves yoga.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, they get it, they do it, they're good, they remember it. I taught some yoga classes at my son's preschool last year, and it was, they loved it. And they're like, "Oh, I've done this before." And it's like, "Yeah, keep doing it." It's only gonna get better,
Downward dog, isn't that a part of how I learned
Yeah, right?
to
Right? Totally, totally. And the pranayama, the breathing exercises, is really, I find that when my children, I've got a 5.5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old, when they get upset, and which happens frequently, I try to do pranayama with them, where I just say, okay, now breathe out, go, and it's because breathing in when you're crying and upset is a really hard thing to do, but breathing out helps to regulate the breath. It helps to calm them down. It instantly brings them to a place where they're feeling a little better, and then they can start talking about what their experience was and what happened. And so now I know, even when I'm driving and something happens in the back seat, and I'm like, "Okay, guys, breathe out," and I hear them going,
Oh, but
it's like
that's
they have that
wonderful.
tool. It's a great tool to have. I think teaching those things alone, and it's, those things are not connected to any particular religion. I mean, yes, they're from India, but there's it's just moving the body. It's opening the muscles. It's so much of our emotions and our experiences are trapped in our bodies, and so in the muscles. And so this is where moving the body and moving the muscles with yoga, with dance, with whatever it is that the person is drawn to, this is such an important thing, because it helps to release whatever memories are stuck. Same with meditation. Even just the simple act of sitting and focusing on your breath, and really bringing your mind back to the breath, bringing yourself back to that breathing through your nose, the way it feels through your nose. I mean, it's how, where it is, it's brings you back to the now. That's yoga. I mean, yoga is all about prana. It's all about the breath. It brings you back to this moment here now. And I think we're a society, a world of go, 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 and it's either people are like worrying about the future or crying about the past, or and it's like, well, where are you now? Just take a moment. It's easy to get caught up in those things, and having the space dedicated to yourself to be here and now through the breath, through sitting quietly. And first you got to get those wiggles out. You got to move your body sometimes. That's where yoga is so beautiful. You get the movement going so you can actually sit for a few minutes or an hour or more, however, whatever your personal goal may be, or so it's I think it's really it's even if you start off with just a few minutes, it's so important to have that, to be able to get back to here and now, Yeah. It's easy to spiral out in this world.
And to teach children how to self-regulate, because
Yes.
so many people don't know, and it's so easy when you're little to learn, however
Yeah.
it is you're going to be in the world.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And it's not like just let them cry it out and let them,
No.
yeah, no, it's not. It's like, okay, let's give you some tools. And now, as you grow older, you know, and in each moment that you experience these things, you'll actually be able to get back to a place of feeling better.
And not do a spiritual bypass, but, you know, the biochemical part of an emotion is 90 seconds. So if we can experience it and then release it, it's over.
That's so interesting. I love that. 90 seconds.
90 seconds. You can re-trigger it, but the biochemical, between the times that the chemicals release and go all the way through your system, if you don't re-trigger it, then it passes out. So if you honor it and pay attention, but we re-trigger it because we don't, either we think the situation's not over or we didn't really allow ourselves to experience it.
Right.
And so you can re-trigger it as much as you want to.
Right. Then those little pathways that are connected in the brain that keep looping over things.
Right. Or you can say, okay, boy, I was really angry. I totally went there. My 90 seconds is up. Time to move on.
I need to get do a 90 second stopwatch on my phone. Okay, here you go. You got 90 seconds to do what you got to do.
Totally feel it. And then do you need it anymore? Is the situation still here?
Yeah. It's actually really interesting to think about that in terms of a tantrum, you know, when a kid has a tantrum or whatever you want to call it, you know, if it's like to do a little time check and say, okay, how long is this going to last? Because at 90 seconds, usually it is done.
And then just let them breathe. They don't need to re-trigger if they get what they need, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm. And so curtailing that almost might be a disservice for.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, okay, go for it, go into it, stamp and scream and yell and cry and shake it out, and then you know, breathe. Interesting. I'm gonna have to try that.
Is it what a great thing to learn? So you don't have a lifetime of drama.
Yeah,
I have another question that I want to ask you because I hear your passion, I hear your joy, I hear your love of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about how much work and focus and attention and daily choice and passion in terms of engaging the struggle was involved in getting where you are.
Well, I think it's an interesting question. I mean, I've been doing this for so long. It's just part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, you know, when I was 16, I knew
who
I was and what I was meant to be doing here. But I doubted it because I didn't really have the experience of anybody else doing this to help me to say, yeah, you can totally do this and this is how. I think, yeah, for whatever reason that was. I think for me personally, it was, you know what? One of the things was actually accepting payment for this has been a real problem for me.
Okay.
Because it's something that I've always thought is a gift, and it's something that I was like, well, this is something I do. This is something it's like second nature. Why would I charge for that? How could I charge for that? And I remember my friends from college being like, you have got to stop, you know, like just put a price tag on it, like make it, you know, and then other people were like, you've spent so much time and money on education with this. It's, you know, and I'm like, okay. So for me, it was an issue in terms of my personal struggle with it. And I still have people who are like, you don't charge enough. And I'm like, fine, whatever. It is what it is. I want to make it accessible to people.
Right.
And so that's my sort of thing. And I think that it's for whatever my karma is with that I think that for me has been a struggle. And so that's where I think it took me a little longer to get to a place of actually offering it as my profession, you know, even though I'd been doing this for forever, you know, it was really 2006 when I graduated from the Institute, and I'd been doing charts that whole year of my classmates and everything. And I was teaching them classes every now and then, you know, and that was when I was like, all right, I'm doing it. And so that's when things shifted and I took that leap. And I think sometimes that's just what it's about just saying, you know what, enough pussyfooting around what's happening here, like take a jump or not, you know, like make a choice, do it or don't, but it's much better to take that leap and just give it a go. Cause what's going to happen otherwise, maybe a bruised ego, who cares, move on. So I think that, I think for me that was, I always had support around it from family and from friends and from people whose charts I did, people I didn't know who were like, oh, I heard you do this, you know, and So I always had support around it. I think it was just my own personal, you know, society says silliness that I had to get over.
Right, right. And move through that.
Yeah, move through that.
Well, it has been a wonderful, amazing conversation with you, Lexi. Please tell us how people can get a hold of you for a reading.
Hey, well, thank you so much for this opportunity. This has been really exciting. I love talking about this stuff.
It's so great. It's such a gift.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I really, it's exciting stuff. So I have a website. It's in the process of being updated. My web person is always on me trying to get it updated. But it's lexneon.com, LexNeon.com. So lexneon.com. And then my email is info@lexneon.com. And that's generally, those are the best ways to get a hold of me. My phone tends to be a challenging way because with kids, it's hard for me to answer all the time, even though I will answer if I'm able to. So it's really best for people to email me. And then because with readings, we don't just look at your birth chart. I also look at question charts. When people have a question, it's almost like a birth of the question when they email me. So I like to have everything in writing with dates and times so I can pull up charts, these Prashna charts, these question charts, so I can get more information about what's going on and the answers to their questions. So so it's nice for people to email me at info@lexneon.com.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, again, thank you so much for sharing this, and that's lexneon.com. And this has been Create Your Bliss with Nika Annan. Thank you.